91.3 WLRN presents South Florida Arts Beat. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Today we welcome back Jay Abate, President and CEO of the nonprofit ArtServe. She'll tell us about their Red Eye fundraiser and upcoming artistic community events. Charles Greenfield previews the exciting Miami Summer Music Festival events with founder and artistic director Michael Rossi. Diego Saldana Rojas takes us to the enticing Viernes Culturales in Little Havana. Chef Norman Van Aken plates up a word on food, and Marilyn Bauer delivers her Palm Beach Arts Calendar. Please stay with us to catch the conversation and information coming up on South Florida Arts Beat right after these news updates from NPR and the WLRN Miami Herald News.
Ed Bell's South Florida Arts Beat, which airs each Friday at 1 p.m., is rebroadcast at 7 p.m. on WLRN Extra HD, now with more power and better coverage in South Florida. Listen on your HD radio at 91.3-2 or live online at WLRN.org.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, Charles Greenfield previews the second annual Miami Summer Music Festival with founder and artistic director Michael Rossi. Diego Saldana Rojas takes us to the Viernes Culturales Art Walk in Little Havana. Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and Marilyn Bauer delivers her Palm Beach Arts Calendar. Since the late 1980s, the nonprofit ArtServe has fundamentally contributed to Broward County's arts infrastructure in quite impressive ways. Voted Broward's best nonprofit arts organization in 2014 at the 4th Annual Nonprofit Academy Awards, and Best Art Gallery Reader's Choice Award from New Times Broward Palm Beach, this organization has quite an impressive track record in supporting the arts. I recently spoke with their president and CEO, Ms. Jay Abate, to find out more about this incredible arts catalyst. And Ms. Jay Abate, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Ed.
It's really great to have you here. You know, ArtServe has been such a magnificent organization over the years. Take us back to when it began.
1989, it was one of the original six arts incubators created in the United States with a specific mission of providing programs, services, and affordable facilities for the artist community to give them the business support network that they need to really develop thriving, successful, sustainable careers as artists.
So you've been in the same building since then?
They moved into our existing building about 15 years ago.
A great facility.
It's a great facility. It was actually the original main library, Broward County. Mm-hmm. And there is a library still on the premises, and the rest of the 25,000 square foot plus facility is all activated by ArtServe and our wonderful resident members.
Describe your facility.
It's a multi-purpose facility that has all kinds of spaces that artists in our community and the community at large can use. So we have a dance studio. So if you're a dancer or you want to start a dance troupe or teach a class, you can rent it by the hour, keep your overhead very low while you're growing your business, and voila, you're in business. And we give you a lot of marketing support and visibility. We have an auditorium space that can morph from a black box theater to a concert hall to a workshop space and on drop of a dime. We have about 20 offices that we rent very affordably to nonprofits, cultural organizations, and people that support those activities. We have a gallery space, two solo galleries, and this year we're very excited. We just opened two actual working artist studios on this premises, so we're so happy to welcome artists George Gatson and Lee Berlin to our family of artists.
Just phenomenal. And plus, you've got all that free parking.
Absolutely. And a lot of visibility.
Now, tell me about your accomplishments over the years. You've really added famously to the arts infrastructure in Broward County, and you can claim that the arts have really grown magnificently in Broward County by what you offer.
Well, you know, the whole area is just so rich culturally now, and we have a wonderful, supportive cultural division in Broward County. So, you know, we are unique because we are a service and support organization. So we don't compete with the arts academies, with the museums, the performing arts centers. We provide all kinds of programs and supportive types of networking that will really help them grow and sustain everything from marketing support to visibility to everything we do is a collaboration.
So you've been maximizing your facility on Sunrise Boulevard, and you've also been expanding your programming. In what ways?
In many ways. So one thing we do is go out into the community to develop relationships with businesses, with other nonprofits, to find new opportunities for artists in our community to have their work seen, to have their work sold, to get hired for activities. And so, for example, we developed a new partnership with the Atlantic Hotel and Spa in Fort Lauderdale Beach this year. So if you go into the lobby of this beautiful high-end hotel, all of the artwork in the lobby is ArtServe member work. It's all for sale. The hotel puts information in every guest room saying this, and we've actually sold art from there. So that's a wonderful opportunity that we cultivate. And we now have about 6 rotating exhibits throughout the county, and we have more that are planned for the fall. And we also partner with nonprofits to help them. You know, we'll get all kinds of calls every single week. For example, we just did a 7 mural project at the ChildNet Services facility. ChildNet Services just moved to a new building. They are the organization that when children are taken out of their home very abruptly, they're brought to this facility until they can find a new caretaker or a new guardian. And it's a very scary time for these kids. And they said, we really want to make these spaces that they're brought to warm and inviting, something intimate and familiar. And so they wanted artists to mural the rooms with storybook themes. And so obviously that's not their core business. So they said, we have a small budget. We have volunteers from BB&T who are willing to help paint with the murals. And we arranged for 7 murals to be done. Amazing depictions of everything from Cat in the Hat to Curious George. And those are the kinds of experiences that really make, you know, getting up every day and going to work so amazing and rewarding, because what a great service that we're providing for the community at large. And we're really building community through art.
Can we see pictures of those murals on artserve.org?
You can, or you can go to our Facebook page as well. There's a lot of videos as well of us in the process of doing them, and some really talented artists like Lori Predico.
So tell me about your annual multimedia fundraiser event, Saturday, July 25th from 6 to 10. It's the Red Eye.
Yes. Well, the Red Eye is, as you said, a really big event for us. It piggybacks onto an art exhibition that's going to run throughout the month of July into August. But our one-day event is what we're calling a Warholian art happening. It's live music, live art, indie films, food, dance, digital art, salon, spoken word. We really celebrate every art form that we represent. And, you know, it is a fundraiser for the organization. The tickets are very affordable, and you really get a lot for your money. And know that every penny we're putting back into the organization to provide new services and facilities for the arts community.
And I understand you're bringing down a pioneering artist of the New York graffiti art movement.
Yes, well, this is our 25th year, so we really wanted to do something special for our anniversary year. And the Red Eye evolved out of the graffiti art movement. And now, you know, it's become so mainstream, and especially here in Miami where, you know, the Wynwood Walls are such a, a tourist destination. Oh. It's hard to remember they didn't even exist 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And so what we are doing is showing the evolution of this art form by bringing in one of the pioneers of that art form in New York, Say Adams. He went on to become the founding creative director of Def Jam Records and, you know, did all these amazing, iconic record albums from the Beastie Boys to Jay-Z to Don Henley to everybody in between. And now corporate America is calling him because this art form is so popular now. He's doing graphics for Coca-Cola and HBO and Comedy Central and Nike and Adidas. And everybody in between as well. So he's going to come down, do an artistic residency. It's a great opportunity for the artists in our community. He's going to mentor them. He's going to work with them. He's going to help them see how, you know, he's been where they are now and mm-hmm. how they can get to where they want to go. And we're doing some things out in the community with students. He's going to do an iconic piece for the Urban League of Fort Lauderdale, and it's going to unveil the day before the National Urban League Conference opens in Fort Lauderdale for the first time ever. So a lot of really exciting things happening with that event. And we also have two wonderful feature films, documentary films, that we're going to be showing during the Red Eye, including one that was actually a Grand Jury Prize winner at the Sundance Festival, Jean-Michel Basquiat, The Radiant Child. Mm. And another one that's very cool called Coming Home, directed by DJ Effin, who actually took cameras onto the island of Cuba to document the rise of the hip-hop culture in Cuba. So that's going to be really incredible. And we have four great bands, starting with Blue Jays, who I believe were just named Best New Band by Miami New Times. So a lot of cool stuff happening.
You didn't leave one thing out.
I'm trying not to.
Well, that's magnificent. We have just a few more moments with Jay Abate, the president and CEO of ArtServe. More info at artserve.org. And also artscalendar.com, I understand, yet another collaboration that you endeavored in with the Broward Cultural Division. So coming up this summer is Saturday, July 25th from 6 to 10 p.m., the Red Eye with so much to offer. And finally, let's talk about Arts Bunker.
Yes, Arts Bunker. So as we move into the new season, we are going to be launching this exciting new space with wonderful partner Jim Hammond from Puppet Network, and he was also the founder of the Day of the Dead of South Florida celebration. And Arts Bunker is a new space that allows us to do some things that are a little bit too messy for us to do at ArtServe, to get into celebrating some new art forms that really haven't been celebrated. We just kicked off the Arts Bunker last weekend with a big gig poster event where, you know, there's all these amazing artists that live right here in South Florida that do all the posters for all the rock bands that mm-hmm. you can imagine, from, you know, Beyonce to Jay-Z to Dave Chappelle, John Waters, you name it, and bands I've never heard of and or I'm too old to have heard of. But it's such a unique art form. And so Chuck Luce from Ardenford Press has his press right on the site there of the Arts Bunker. Jim Hammond has his puppet studio and production facility there. We're going to be doing a lot of workshops and classes, and it's a great space for people that want to do things at ArtServe and want to do things affordably. And if we're too booked out or it's just not the right space, now we can offer at our satellite location, the Arts Bunker, ArtServe at Equality Park.
So many exciting things coming to ArtServe. And for more info, artserve.org, or you can call 954-462-8190. ArtServe, located at 1350 East Sunrise Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. That's the place where Red Eye is happening. And thank you to Jay Abate, President and CEO, for joining us today on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks, Ed.
We'll be back with more South Florida Arts Beat right after these messages. Listening to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Diego Saldana Rojas takes us to the Viernes Culturales Art Walk in Little Havana. Chef Norman Van Aken delivers a word on food, and Marilyn Bauer presents her Palm Beach Arts Calendar. Now, this weekend opens a world of musical events through August the 2nd, from the Miami Summer Music Festival. Here's Charles Greenfield with a preview.
While South Florida's musical scene tends to go dormant during the summer, this year appears to break the mold. at Barry University's Summer 2015 will buzz with student musicians scurrying to master classes and work sessions in five fields: opera, piano, orchestra, composition, and conducting. The Miami Summer Music Festival states their mission as one that will provide world-class musical instruction and performance experience at affordable fee structures to highly motivated and pre-professional musicians. Under the artistic direction of Michael Rossi, who has recently debuted conducting for the Philadelphia, Baltimore, and Charleston Symphonies, the Miami Summer Music Festival will also provide a series of concerts in July and August, including highlighting opera stars Deborah Voigt and Cheryl Milnes, performing and presiding over masterclasses. Other concerts will feature Humperdinck's Hansel and Gretel, Britten's Albert Herring, Massenet's Cinderella, and Mozart's Don Giovanni. Michael Rossi will conduct the Mozart as well as lead the Miami Summer Musical Festival Symphony Orchestra in Stravinsky's Rite of Spring off Barry University campus at the New World Center on Miami Beach, July 25th. Recently, I spoke to Michael Rossi about the Miami Summer Music Festival, its five summer institutes, and concert performances starting July 5th and ending August 2nd at Barry University's Shepherd and Ruth K. Broad Performing Arts Center, including collaboration with the Miami International Piano Festival and a three-week piano symposium. Michael Rossi, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Nice to meet you. Glad to be here.
Michael, you have debut experience at several American orchestras and conducted Placido Domingo and the Chinese National Orchestra in Beijing. Briefly describe your musical background and your work conducting opera with the Washington National Opera.
Sure. I started out as a pianist and then got into trumpet playing, and I went to the prestigious Manhattan School of Music and was lucky enough to win a position in the orchestra at the Kennedy Center. I was 22 years old for trumpet. And I was always conducting my entire life. And one day, Placido Domingo saw me conducting L'Histoire, Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale. And he came in, watched me conduct the whole entire rehearsal, then showed up to the performance the next day, which got more attention than the actual performance that he was in the audience. And he gave me an audition for the Washington National Opera's Young Artist Program. And I got the audition. I got the job as a young artist conductor for 2 years. And I became one of his, you know, assistant conductors. And during that time, he was mentoring me. And after many small concerts, they kept getting larger and larger until he asked me to conduct him in China for a new theater he was opening and in Beijing. So I got to conduct him on a lot of his three tenors repertoire, which was a dream come true. And it's been great ever since.
And this fall, apparently, you're doing something else.
Yes. At Washington Opera, I will be conducting their production of Hansel and Gretel.
Okay. Now, what motivated you to create the Miami Summer Music Festival at Barry University? And what is the niche you're filling? In essence, why South Florida? And I hear the Betsy South Beach Hotel is also a major sponsor.
Yes, we have a lot of support from the community. The way it happened was I was doing a music festival in Italy as a artistic director, music director. And I decided I wanted to create something in the United States for the same students to get more education here. And I was in Miami because my wife is from Miami, and I wanted to take her out on a date, actually, and she was wanting to go to see a symphony concert, so I couldn't find any concerts in July and August. So it just came to me, why not Miami? And so we decided to put the concert series and festival together. And we were only expecting, like, the first year 30 or 40 students. And we wound up having 165. And we wound up doing three opera productions and many symphony concerts last year. And this year we tripled, basically, in size. We had over 1,000 applications. And we had to shut off the applications because we couldn't listen to them all live or nor even on video for our faculty. And it just grew and grew. And now we're running five different institutes this summer.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those five institutes. Briefly describe the curriculum and daily events leading to performance opportunities for the young musicians.
Sure. Well, our largest two institutes are the Opera Institute and the Orchestra Institute. The way all the institutes are run is that we try to find the education that the students are lacking in college. And we try to give them that missing information. For opera, it is getting on stage in full costume and with a full orchestra. And that's something that they experience that they really need. Our composition program is brand new, and our goal is to get as much of their music not only written and worked on with famous composers, but performed. And they have their own contemporary orchestra that performs their music for them. The piano program, a great program, is designed where the student comes and studies with all five teachers instead of just one teacher in other institutions. And all of these different things are giving the students what they really need and lack in their education, and we try to fulfill those needs.
Well, speaking of piano, the festival includes a 3-week piano symposium. Why don't you tell us about the pianists?
Giselle Brodsky is fantastic, and she's designed this program in collaboration with her festival. So basically, her pianists that are giving recitals throughout the year are now coming back in the summer to teach. And they're also giving their own recitals as well. So Misha Dacik will be giving an all Scriabin program. Francesco Libetta will be doing a program with Strauss and Debussy. And even Nick Van Blas will be doing the Bach's Goldberg variations at the same time as working with the students who are doing their own concerts.
And this is in July and August.
July, yes, in the very beginning of August.
Okay. On July 11th, the great soprano Deborah Voigt will give a recital of Strauss and Wagner, followed by Mahler's Fifth.
Yes.
That's a huge event by any standard. Give us the breakdown of her concert and a little bit about the challenge of Mahler.
Well, Debbie, I ran into her at Carnegie Hall and asked her to do a master class for the students, and she agreed. And then we noticed that it was the night after our opening night. So I just asked her, would you mind singing the opening concert? And she said, sure. And I've always wanted to conduct Wagner. So we're doing some Wagner arias. We're doing some Strauss. And then she's even throwing in some musical theater at the end of it. And Mahler Fifth has already been planned. And it's a big challenge. It's a big piece. But just like I mentioned before, for the Orchestra Institute, we're doing works that they may not be playing yet in school, but are incredibly important on their auditions for their next stages in their careers. And that's why we choose the repertoire that we do, because these are classic important works that they may not have played yet.
Now, let's go through the schedule very quickly. July 17th, there's Strauss's Ein Heldenleben. And who's conducting that?
Gregor Novak will be conducting. He's from Miami. And that concert will also have all of the soloists from the concerto competition winners.
July 18th and 19th is the family opera, Humperdinck's Hansel and Gretel.
Yes, we're trying to do one family production each year in which we invite many children, and we're having hundreds of children come to these two operas, and they'll get to meet the cast and characters afterwards.
And July 19th and 20th, Cheryl Milnes.
Yes, Cheryl was here with us last year. He'll be giving master classes, and there'll be a concert in his honor at the Betsy South Beach, which is one of our major sponsors, who are not only donating rooms to the faculty, but they're presenting and sponsoring their own concert chamber series.
And there are two more operas, Britten's Albert Herring on July 24th and 26th,
yes,
and Massenet's Cinderella on July 30th and August 1st. And then you're closing the opera series with Mozart's Don Giovanni.
Correct.
July 31st and August 2nd.
Yeah.
It's my mother's favorite opera.
Oh, great. And I'm conducting it, too. It's one of my favorites. And
finally, the big off-campus event of the series is Stravinsky's Rite of Spring at the New World Center, July 25th at 7:30. That's a frenetic and revolutionary composition, and it's a challenge.
Yes, and there's a lot more to that concert. It's actually the highlights of all five programs. So we'll have a student composer work being performed and premiered. The Opera Institute will be doing 30 minutes of arias and scenes, as well as the piano concerto competition winner.
Well, Michael Rossi, I think that this summer festival at Barry University with the Betsy South Beach is going to be fantastic, and I thank you for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you.
Nothing makes the summer doldrums speed away, at least temporarily, like terrific music making in a new concert hall with great air conditioning. South Florida is slowly but surely assuming a more mature year-round attitude towards the cultural arts, including classical music. The Miami Summer Music Festival under artistic director Michael Rossi is certainly an antidote due to the season. And better yet, the opera selections, solo recital of Deborah Voigt, and orchestral works by Rossi and others will sweeten our summer months. For more information, call 1-800-838-7000. 3006 and go to their website at miamisummermusicfestival.com. And there's ample free parking at Barry University. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
Charles Greenfield is a classical music contributor for the Sun Sentinel and has written for the Miami Herald. You can email him at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. Hello, Ed Bell with you. It's South Florida Arts Beat on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Later on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken has prepared a word on food, and our Palm Beach Arts calendar features Marilyn Bauer. Viernes Culturales, or Cultural Fridays, Incorporated is a nonprofit organization which produces the very popular Art, Music, and Culture Festival held on the last Friday of every month in the heart of Little Havana on Calle Ocho. Here's Diego Saldana Rojas to tell us more.
It's 9:30 on a Friday night in Little Havana. Every corner from 17th Avenue on the west to 14th on the east is bursting with movement, sound, and color. Scents of paella, colada, and tobacco fill the air. Lights flood tables lined up along closed-off streets where local vendors sell their craft goods. Tourists, transplants, and born and raised locals all converge on an area that already receives hundreds of visitors a week. The sidewalks and streets try to handle the 5,000 to 10,000 visitors Viernes Culturales can bring in. The monthly Viernes Culturales event has been livening up this portion of Little Havana for 15 years, with Bill Fuller, a born and raised Miamian, as its current president. I met with Bill at his offices on 8th Street near 16th Avenue in a two-story building labeled with the words Futurama.
And it's a building that houses about 16 artists downstairs. It's actually working studio spaces. But during the Viernes Culturales events, this particular space becomes very, very active with live music, a lot of traffic coming in and out. All the artists come out for that night, so they're able to interact directly with the visitors that come to the festival. Viernes Culturales also has their principal office here in the building. So this is considered like the western end of the festival.
A few seconds later, we walk out the front door and onto 8th Street sidewalk to talk more about the neighborhood and Viernes Culturales. I wanted to get Bill's perspective on how he saw the neighborhood change during a Viernes night.
Oh, I would say it's about 200 times more active. Although Calle Ocho, all the time, you're going to get this type of activity. That's why it's such a brilliant neighborhood, is that we're actually in a real working neighborhood. We're in a real retail district that's always functioning. It doesn't just happen for a special event. But the idea originally of Viernes Culturales was to serve as an economic engine that would help stimulate the businesses in this particular zone. In different parts of Little Havana, I can tell you that the rent in this particular pocket of the neighborhood is more. A lot of the businesses and local operators that want to be part of the Little Havana experience are selecting this part of the neighborhood. And a lot of that is due to the fact that on that one Friday night every month, there's that guaranteed stimulus, that big income that comes in. So it's a really important part. But in the last 15 years since the beginning of Viernes Culturales, we have actually seen our tourism grow about tenfold. So we're receiving about 3 million visitors a year. That's about one out of every four visitors coming to Miami-Dade right now. It's huge.
Tourism's impact is seen everywhere along this corridor of Little Havana, with tour buses making frequent stops all along Calle Ocho and open souvenir shops selling a variety of trinkets stamped with Cuban flags, labeled with the words Miami or anything that has to do with cigars. And just 2 months ago, in cooperation with the Greater Miami Convention and Visitors Bureau, the City of Miami, and its parking authority, Bienes Culturales opened up the Little Havana Visitor Center a few paces eastward from Domino Plaza, a nod towards Little Havana's continually increasing visitors of all types, visitors that play a key role in keeping this monthly event going.
A lot of the art galleries, restaurants, bars, different retailers on the street are all very active. They all program a lot of their own events and stuff that cater to the crowds coming to visit Bienes Culturales.
On the Viernes Culturales night, I walked through 8th Street. Restaurants like Casa Panza hosted a singer. A bar down the street had a hostess waving in anyone that walked by. And the Top Cigar Shop on 15th Avenue drew a crowd that held up the entire sidewalk as people played drums and sang inside. On our day walk down 8th Street, Bill brought me to a building located on 15th Avenue.
Originally, actually dating back to the 1930s, an old historic restaurant. Actually, if you look at the terrazzo floor, you'll see some of the U-shaped diner that used to exist back in the day. It was like a seafood restaurant.
As several visitors walked the rows of the Little Havana Cigar Factory, some, like Joe Cardona, sat on the couches distributed throughout the store to have a cigar. Cardona, an independent producer, film director, and op-ed columnist for the Miami Herald, has lived most of his life in Miami and has witnessed the changes Little Havana has undergone.
The neighborhood is obviously in transition, and I think the heart of Miami is being redefined. There's a whole new generation of Miamians that are now kind of redefining the area and making it what Miami is, which is a kind of a melting pot of different flavors. And I think Miami's flourishing, as is Little Havana. And Little Havana, again, is at the very center of this city. So we see it from East Little Havana and the changes going on there to Calle Ocho itself and the lively businesses and bars and restaurants that are opening up. It's really making this place a viable, exciting place to be. And again, it's a new generation kind of coming into its own. And I love that it's owned and operated by Miamians. So it's not shoehorned. We don't have a shoehorned culture here. We don't have people coming in from other parts of the country and saying, okay, we're going to open a Creole restaurant, or we're going to open. We don't need that. We have all the culture we need. We just need to give it venues where it could flourish.
One of those flourishing venues was two doors down from the Little Havana Cigar Factory, a building whose history also goes back to the 1930s. Zach Bush is one of the owners of the Ball and Chain, a large bar that pays homage to the original Ball and Chain venue that opened in the same location in 1935 and that would later close in 1957. Bush, a personal friend and business partner of Fuller's, grew up in South Miami-Dade, but unlike Fuller, did not explore Little Havana until he reached adulthood.
You fall in love with it, especially being a local that grew up here, that like here's this culturally rich area that like is a hidden gem almost, even though like you would think it's not a hidden gem, at least to me who knew nothing about it, I fell in love with it from day one. And of course we pay homage to some of the greats that played here. Like what, I mean, history and being a part of it does not come around every day, does not come around every lifetime. So the fact that like we have an opportunity to continue the tradition of these amazing artists such as, you know, Count Basie, Chet Baker, Billie Holiday, Lena Horne, that all played in these very walls, not just saying, hey, they played at Ball and Chain and, you know, here, we like, no, they played right here. So, yeah, I mean, it's epic and exciting.
For Bush, a true fan of jazz, owning a bar like the Ball and Chain is not only a dream come true, but a chance to expose jazz to a wider audience. A task made easier with the foot traffic an event like Bienes Culturales brings in.
You know, we open our doors and like kids who would maybe never even heard jazz, they see our musicians there and they see them playing and people just stop on the street and watch. And that's really what we're all about, is exposing what we do here to everyone who's coming for this festival. And so I think the greatest value Bienes Culturales serves to us is exposing us to the people and the passersby of what's going on in the neighborhood. And they may or may not come in that night, but now all of a sudden, like, they've seen our musicians play, you know, they see the line of people, they see the people that are coming in, and, you know, now all of a sudden we're on their radar.
During my time exploring this corner of Little Havana, both during a Viernes Culturales evening and on a weekday afternoon, everyone I spoke to made it apparent that Little Havana is a truly unique space within an already unique South Florida. The goal of Viernes Culturales, boosting local business and keeping the vibrant culture and history of Little Havana alive, seems to have been working well, since for the past 15 years, on every last Friday of the month, there's been a party on 8th Street. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Diego Saldana Rojas.
A South Florida native, Diego Saldana Rojas is an FIU graduate who reports for the WLRN Miami Herald News team. You can email him at saldaroj@gmail.com or on Twitter at saldaroj. For more information about Viernes Culturales, go to viernesculturales.org. That's spelled viernesculturales.org. Their next event is Friday, July 31st. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Ed Bell with you. And now, Chef Norman Van Aken gives us a word on food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the os and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is tall food. My mother was in the restaurant business. She entered it not long after World War II, and her time working in the shipyards was over. She had an accident in one of those shipyards, and it did some long-term damage to her back. But that did not stop her from taking on a lifetime of hard work on her feet. The options for her were not vast. She gave birth to our older sister Jane when she was quite young, and as a single working mom, the restaurant world made sense to her. But she took to it like a duck to water. And though she raised the three of us kids, even taking time to help run a local chapter of the Girl Scouts, we never felt abandoned and that she wasn't there for us. Still, I was a bit of a lost boy for a while. I stayed in college long enough to avoid Vietnam's claws, but I didn't know what to do in terms of working, despite how much my mom seemed to love her chosen profession. But one day, an ad in a newspaper just seemed to hit me at the perfect moment. I had been fired as a hot tar roofer. There is nothing like sudden poverty to illuminate a new pathway in a young man's brain. Rent was coming with or without a job, so I took it. Mom and I had a common bond once again. She came to live with my wife, Janet, and our son, Justin, her grandson. One of the morning cooking shows was on the television she was observing. She didn't really watch TV so much as studied it. I was hurrying around looking for some papers I needed before I could jump in my car and get to the restaurant. She exhaled a long column of cigarette smoke from her chair by the tube. I noted that, judging from the concentration, velocity, arc, and distribution of that puff, followed by the subsequent stubbing out, her opinion of this TV how-to was upcoming. Her smoking was a body language I'd known my whole life. "What?" she asked, wrapping her pajamas around her now frail frame, is the purpose of all this tall food chefs are hell-bent on serving these days. I was already in a rush, but this was not a simple question. My mind reeled for a short yet satisfying response as the smoke curled and tightened in the air. I could see the TV chef had just finished a dish of some, though not staggering, height. A lot of it is just for looks, Mom, not unlike the ravishing outfit you're wearing right now. But sometimes it's a great way to give some wonderful textural differences to food. She rolled her eyes at my attempt at sarcasm, but countered, "What does that mean?" Her match striking out either a too esoteric response or me getting down US 1 just yet. "Well, Ma," I tried, "it's like a great club sandwich. You bite through the layers of crunchy toast, through the delicate lettuces and juicy tomato, and then the crispy bacon, through the meaty pull of smoky turkey, and the soft luxuriousness of avocado, mayo, and so on. If you laid out all the components flat on a plate, you'd never get that feeling." "I don't like club sandwiches," she said. "And aren't you late for work?" Tall food, towering woman. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
You heard what I said, waiter, please. I want mine fried. I want the frim-fram sauce with the os and fay with Chef Baba on the side.
Norman Van Aken is the author of the memoir, No Experience Necessary, The Culinary Odyssey of Norman Van Aken. Please tune in tomorrow morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Fusion Cooking. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat entertainment calendar. And today we welcome back Ms. Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs for the Palm Beach County Cultural Council. How has life been, Marilyn?
It's been pretty exciting over here. We are very proud to report that we just won two American Business Association awards. They're called the Stevies.
Bravo.
We won a gold. Yeah, it was really great. We won a gold for a public relations event that we did with Vanilla Ice at the Governor's Conference on Tourism. And we also won a Silver Stevie for our magazine, Art and Culture Magazine.
Bravo.
So that was exciting. So one of the things that's really exciting right now is that many of our august cultural institutions are really giving locals a break when it comes to admissions and the price of tickets. And so what you'll hear a lot of today is free, free, free. And I'd like to start out with the Norton Museum of Art, which is free for Palm Beach County residents on Saturdays and free on Thursdays for all Florida residents. And, of course, their Art After Dark is free. And they have an amazing exhibition going on right now. It's their major summer show. And it's called Going Places, Transportation Designs from the Gene S. and Frederick A. Scharf Collection. And this focuses on the art of transportation design during the mid-20th century. It's on view through Jan 10. And it includes more than 200 objects, including design drawings, concept sketches, renderings, advertising art, and posters, as well as models of trains, planes, automobiles. It really examines exactly how we got here today. So it's really something to take advantage of. The FAU Department of Theater and Dance in Boca is premiering a play called The Royal Family. It's written back in the 1920s and is a farcical exploration of the life of the Cavendish acting family, and something well worth taking a look at. The Palm Beach Opera and the Maltz Jupiter Theater have gotten together to present Opera Discovery Concert for Kids on Monday, July 13th at 10:30 a.m. at the Maltz Jupiter Theater in Jupiter. The Palm Beach Opera's artists take to the Maltz stage to present an array of celebrated arias, duets, and ensemble numbers for kids. And the concerts are followed up by a Q&A where the, you know, kids can ask all those inquiring questions. The Palm Beach Photographic Center is doing something really interesting. They have an exhibition up called Picture My World, and it features 50 photographs taken by teenagers who came to the U.S. last year as part of a flood of unaccompanied minors from Central America. The exhibit opens on June 26th and runs through August 15th. The images were selected from hundreds collected over an eight-month period in which the teens and their mentors, who were from Lake Worth, met weekly to explore their new home. And the photographs accompany journal entries made by the teens, and, you know, you can really see the world through their eyes. A little night music, one of my favorites. How about you,
Ed? Yeah, oh, I love it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that is so great about the summertime, in my estimation, is that when Palm Beach Drama Works does their special presentations, they call them a musical concert, but they're actually a musical done without a full stage production. So it's very intimate. The actors are in their regular clothes. They may add a, you know, some kind of prop they carry around. They sing the full score. They move around the stage, often, you know, reading from the script. And it's really fun and interesting and just as dynamic as any full stage production. And that'll be July 10th through the 19th. It's one of my favorite things to do. For a different kind of opera, how about Tommy? Remember Tommy from the 60s?
Oh, boy, that's going back.
It's going back. If you can remember, you weren't there. It's not just exactly like the concept album that came out in the 60s or the Elton John film in the 70s. It's a lot of plot twists that are a little different. This whole show was rewritten for Broadway in 93. It's a 5-time Tony Award winner. It's at the Lakeworth Playhouse, July 9th through the 26th. And then we have the Boca Museum of Art, which is doing People and Places photographs from the collection. And I always like to see these shows where the curators take a look at what they have in the collection and put them together in a really, really interesting way. And this is really what this show is about. They're showcasing their collection in two galleries. Lots of really interesting people there. Henry Fox Talbot, for example. Just a great show. And then for the few of us who are not sick of Let It Go, we have the opportunity on July 26th at the Meisner Park Amphitheater. Dina Menzel will be performing, and she got the Tony Award for her part in Wicked. And this is part of her world tour, so July 26th, she'll want to be at the Meisner Park Amphitheater. And finally, the Birds Radio Theater at the Arts Garage. You know, the Arts Garage is doing this great series of radio plays, and they have just been so popular. And this July 22nd and 23rd, they are doing Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the movie starred Tippi Hedren, and it's an adopted 1952 novel. So this is a different way to see how this might have been presented if it had been a radio play.
Marilyn, where can we go for more information?
Go to palmbeachculture.com.
Big thanks to Ms. Marilyn Bauer, Director of Marketing and Governmental Affairs of Palm Beach County Cultural Council, for all of those wonderful events. And happy holiday to you, Marilyn.
Happy holiday to you too, Ed.
And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Andy Wagner is our technical director, and Paul Leary, our online producer. We'd also like to thank our contributors, Charles Greenfield, Diego Saldana Rojas, Norman Van Aken, and Marilyn Bauer. Please call us with your comments at 305-995-2258. You can fax us your event information to 305-995-2221 or email it to us at info@wlrn.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, we'll feature Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Please have yourself a great weekend and a happy holiday. And as always, please keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.